This is Megatron. This is the glorious Megatron. And this episode of the Beast Unleashed podcast features Stephen C. Phillips, Mike Blanchard, and Michael Wilson.
Hello, and welcome to the world's first ever Beast Wars Beast Machines Review Podcast. This is the Beast Unleashed Podcast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG1 Mike, and I'm joined by Pecan Court Michael. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. And Steve Megatron.
Hello, joined by the guy that's not mentioned first.
Oh, good lord.
And technically, you probably should be, because you may be a bigger fan of this particular genre than the either one of us. So,
well, first of all, I am a fan of the show. I did watch all three seasons within 48 hours of when I first got the DVDs.
So I had to suffer through the painstaking of watching it on cable television for 3 years.
That's right. He actually had to watch the commercials.
Well,
yes.
So, I mean, if there's like a level of fandom that includes exactly, yeah.
Well, all right. Here's the thing. Normally, I say, because for the majority, Steve's outside of my own voice, which is pretty much on every show that we do. Steve's voice is the second voice that is on pretty much every show that we do outside of ToyCast.
So I'm the second voice.
Usually, shut up. I usually say, as usual, or like on All Things Transformers, he will say, this is Steve Megatron, and joining me, as usual, is TFG1 Mike. So that's why I put his name last, because I usually say, and as usual, because he's always the one that's co-hosting or hosting with me on a lot of the Transformers stuff. So, you know, he kind of blew it out of proportion on the decade in review. He's like, what do you mean, as usual?
I was trying to be funny at the same time, kind of like now, except I was pissed that night. So there's a slight difference in tone.
Oh, I thought you were pissed this time.
No.
Like, wait a minute, my name isn't the first one in lights, and, you know.
Okay, Cryotech.
Is that what that was?
That's
I will just have light. To kill another.
Before we get into our episode discussions today, I would like to let everybody know that we have decided on when this show will be released. It will be released every other Monday. The reason for that is because I wanted people to have something to look forward to on Mondays. And because of the scheduling, we're not going to make it a weekly show. It would just be too difficult with all the other weekly stuff that I particularly have to do. And I know the two guys to my left are both married and they have real lives unlike I do. So, speaking of married, Michael's wife nearly confused the hell out of both of us asking if we were supposed to record the other night for this show. I said, no, I'm just posting that it's coming up.
Yeah, you were being a little confusing because, you know, she told me she basically said, Mike just posted that he's going to do the podcast tonight.
No.
And I'm like, what? That's not till next week.
That's not what I said.
Well, you said you weren't. When I read it, I assumed that you meant research. I didn't read it as you're podcasting tonight. But
I was watching when I posted that. It was right before I started watching the episodes, so I could do my research and write my notes. That's what it was for. You are correct, sir. So, and she just kind of like blew it out of the water. I'm like, no.
She's like, well, wait a minute. Well,
no, not.
Because I had already told her, you know, well, we're doing this next week. And,
right.
And she's like, oh, wait a minute. I think Mike's jumping the gun on you.
No. I was watching the episodes.
Yeah.
I think before we get into the episode discussions, we need to talk about the voice actors and the characters, which isn't something we really hit on in the episode zero, because we were kind of talking about, we were reviewing Theft of the Golden Disk. The voice acting in this, I think, is superb.
Oh, yes. Ultimately awesome.
Yeah. I like that they're Well, I want to say with the exception of a few characters that are more cartoony, but they're almost like people using their own conversational voices. Especially with Gary Chalk and Cheetor. I mean, with Rhinox, to a certain extent, you know, he's a little gravelly, you know, and I want to say Scorponok is a little cartoonish, and, you know, Megatron, David Kay's way over the top on him. But everyone else is more along the lines of just so, you know, it's not like the superhero voice. It's
exactly,
you know, regular conversational.
Unlike, whereas Scott McNeil's characters, off-the-wall type-ish voices.
Well, yeah, they have to be, though. It's Scott McNeil.
Yes.
You know, I mean...
Well, he has to be able to differentiate the different voices. They can't all sound like Scott McNeil.
True. Very true.
I'm going to refer to my handy-dandy voice actor guide that's on PredaconEmpire.com.
Yes, it's hidden amongst all the other stuff.
Actually, it's not even that hidden. It's actually just in the information tab.
Oh.
There's just a Beast Wars tab in there. But,
Okay.
I guess I'll do a quick rundown of Maximals and then Predacons. And
that's
should
what...
I leave something out, which I probably won't. just correct me. First off, we have Optimus Primal, the leader of the Heroic Maximals, which is voiced by Gary Chalk. Pretty much his second in command for the start of the series, or at least for Beast Rhinox, which is Richard Newman. Cheetor, which is Ian Corlett. Rattrap, Dinobot, and Silverbolt are all Scott McNeil. Silverbolt obviously is not among the starting cast of the show. Airazor is Pauline Newstone. Tegatron is Blue Mancuma. Depth Charge is David Sobloff. I didn't know this until I actually looked it up, but the Maximal ship computer is actually Ian Corlett as well.
Oh,
and,
voice.
What's that?
The male voice, you mean.
Yes. Well, the Maximal Sentinel.
Right, right.
And Transmutating Una is Susan Blue.
Cool.
Yep. And then, Tigerhawk is also Blue Mancuma, who did Tegatron.
Yeah.
As for the evil and dark Predacons, which all vary in voices depending on whatever their form happens to be, we start off with Megatron, which is David Kay. Waspinator is Scott McNeil. Black Arachnia via Venus Terzo. Scorponok is Donald Brown. Tarantulas, Alec Willows. Terror Sword, Doug Parker. Inferno, Jim Burns, which also, like various other character or voice actors, jumped over to Beast Machines later on.
Mm-hmm.
Quick Strike, which is Colin Murdoch. Rampage, which is Campbell Lane. Again, Transmetal 2 Dinobot, which is Scott McNeil. And the Predacon ship computer, which is Elizabeth Savinkoff.
I know we're not there yet, obviously, because we're just starting this show, but since we are talking about the voice actors, for some odd reason, even though I don't really like the character of Rampage, I love the voice. That voice is just so just really creepy.
Yeah,
as it should be.
Well, true, but I mean, it's just, I don't know, when I first heard it, me personally, when Beast Wars first came out, I didn't even know it was Beast Wars. I thought Reboot was the next Transformers cartoon. But
wow. I still don't know what Reboot is. I know it's a mainframe product. I just... not sure.
Anyways, so when I watched the season all the way through, or when I watched specifically the Beast Wars 3 seasons all the way through, I could have sworn I had heard this voice somewhere else. I haven't looked him up to see what else he's done in, but it was a voice that I could have sworn I heard before in voice acting.
Off to IMDb we go.
Michael, who are your some of your favorite characters or voices from this?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. You know, I do dig Megatron, because, again, he's over the top. and I was trying to count how many times he said yes and no. And I lost count. it's just, I didn't realize it was so prevalent in his speech. It's just all the time.
Yeah, he actually, I think I mentioned that in last episode, at least for the...
Yeah, you're supposed to send out a link to that video that had the compilation of all the times he said yes and no.
I think it's like, if I remember correctly from the last episode, from the episode zero, I think it's like 55 yes and 45 no, or it's something like that where the yeses outweigh the noes or something.
Yes.
Yeah, but it would still be very cool to see.
Yes, it,
Link that on Facebook or something.
Yeah, I need to do that. 166 times, for yes and 54 times for no.
Oh, well,
there you go.
Yeah. I got it wrong, but...
Yes, I have the video. I will post that.
And one thing we need to mention before we... I mean, since we are talking about the voice actors, Steve and I had the great privilege to interview Mr. K himself. That was the first interview we did, and then Michael and I had the privilege to interview Gary Chalk.
Very cool.
Yes, very cool.
Yes, very awesome.
Yeah, Michael was like, you signed my monkey. Gary's like, yeah, I signed a lot of monkeys.
I was expecting him to go, I remember you! That didn't happen. I was going to say, you hit on my wife. Do you remember that? Yeah. He probably hit on a lot of wives that day, too. I don't know.
You know what? Honestly, seriously, if I was married and Optimal Optimus or Gary Chalk or whoever hit on my wife, I wouldn't mind it if a Transformers voice actor hit on my wife.
Oh, God. You see, that'd be wrong. It's like, you know, you can... this is going to come out so wrong, but it's like, okay, you can sleep with my wife as long as you talk to her in Optimus Primal's voice. It's like, God, the seeds of the past are buried deep in your ass.
Wow.
It's like, oh, well, hold on there, Gary, hold on there. She doesn't even give me that. You get out of there, Gary.
You know, he'll be like, do it, maximize.
Oh, damn.
Oh, you're killing me. All right. So, you know, with Mike here, who doesn't actually have a wife and doesn't really see the intricacies involved here, but I'm actually, you know, becoming angry at the thought of somebody else giving it to my wife, let alone while shouting, lines from the show.
I can understand where you're coming from, but
yeah.
As a Transformers geek, or maybe not wife, maybe you know, having a wife, having a voice actor hit on your wife isn't maybe like a girlfriend or something. Even then, that's a stretch, but still. I mean, if Scott McNeil hit on your girlfriend as Waspinator, that would be kind of cool.
Oh, well, I mean, Christy and Scott McNeil had a long conversation once with his girlfriend.
Married again?
Well, we were married at that point. The first time that we had... Huh?
You said her name was Christy.
Christy.
Oh, okay.
Well, Christy and I... God, this was 96 when we met... Gary Chalk, you know, and he was just, you know, he was whispering something in her ear, and she was giggling, and I was like, what did he say? And she's like, oh, he's hitting on me. I'm like, oh, my God. But, and first I'm like, how cool is that, you know? Gary Chalk's hitting on my girlfriend. But then later on, when Christy had the conversation with Scott McNeil at a BotCon, this was only a couple years ago, I wasn't actually there for it, but they... for some reason, had Scott McNeil signing while Hasbro was doing their presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the presentation because, you know, that's the whole reason you're there, to see what Hasbro is going to do the next year. And Christy was basically out talking to Scott McNeil because there was nobody there in line, and she was there just hanging out with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she said, yeah, we talked with him, talked with his girlfriend for a while, and he was doing all the voices, and I was saying, no, don't know that one either. You know? That's crazy. I'm like, you know, you watched all the shows with me. How could you not know that voice? And she's like, I just couldn't place it. It's a long time ago.
Yes.
Yes. I did find out what other stuff Rampage voices.
Mm-hmm.
He was in G.I. Joe Extreme as Clancy. He was also in various He-Man shows as Skeletor in the early 90s. What's the other one that was memorable? He's been in Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Was he?
Baron Strucker.
As the voice, or that was him?
That was him.
Wow. Dude is old.
And he's in Action Man as Dr. X.
Wow. I'm going to have to go back and watch Nick Fury after this then. Holy crap. Because Von Strucker, he was old and wow. Damn. Anyway. Anyway.
Yeah. I'd have to say my favorite characters for the show would be obviously Megatron. I'm not going to hide that. Obviously, my name is that all over the place.
Yes.
And I went nuts when I actually got to interview David Kay. So
that's why I've started doing pre-show and post-show records for interviews. That way we can kind of go nuts before we actually talk to the people, so we don't actually geek out on them like I did with Stan Bush the second time we talked to him.
That was the first time I talked to him,
though. Right, okay. Like I said, the second time I talked to him.
Oh, okay. Mr. Professional.
Anyways.
Although, I am waiting to hopefully someday talk to Scott McNeil as well. That would be pretty cool.
He is very cool to talk to.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
If we ever do get that interview, and I'm not saying we will or we won't, I don't know. I can pretty much tell you that interview is going to go on longer and longer and longer, because from what Michael tells me, he likes to tell stories, and he will just sit there and talk. I was actually surprised when Michael and I interviewed Chuck, because I didn't ask him like I did David Kay. I didn't ask him. I said, how much time do you actually have, and yada, yada, yada. We just went right into it, and we ended up with over an hour of interview conversation and questions.
The poor guy's dog is crossing his legs like.
Yeah, well, he did like three of them within a 2-week time span.
Yep.
Yeah.
On different shows. I mean, it was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
What you gonna do?
Busy guy.
Yep.
Yep. Just like the rest of them. Shit, David Kay barely had enough time to talk to us.
Yeah, but he made time though.
Yeah, which was really awesome of him.
Yep.
Good guy.
Yes.
So, what are your other, besides your namesake, what are your other favorite characters, Steve?
I would say that I like the whole Rat Trap Dinobot dynamic.
The old married couple, yeah.
Yeah. I really, a lot of the characters, I really like all of them. The only ones that I could care less about, I would have to say, would be Quickstrike, Scorponok, Airazor, and yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, for me, I really like Cheetor. I think Cheetor is kind of like my number one for the show, because
he's like Hot Rod.
Basically, he is the Beast Wars version of Hot Rod, because he starts out really young, and by the time he gets to Beast Machines, he has the most character development and the most maturity out of the characters that have gone along up until then. You know, he gets the most mature out of everyone. You know, and outside of having a Matrix scene with Cheetor, you know, I mean, he basically is a Hot Rod / Rodimus type. I like Rat Trap, but it just depends. I liked his Transmetal 1 form the best. I don't really like the whole original Beast form, because rats, ew.
He's more of a dick in the beginning.
True.
He's like, you know what? Screw you guys. I'm just along for the ride, and if someone's gonna get their ass shot off, it's gonna be you. And then toward the end, well, not the end, but toward when he becomes transmetalized, he's more a team player, you know. He it's less mercenary.
Right, exactly. Ones that I don't like would have to be, Tarantulas has got to be number one, and I will get into that later once we talk about the web. Who's?
By the way, I saved that comment. So.
Good. Don't say it yet. Wait till
I won't.
Wait till that episode. What was the other one? Tarantulas, Scorponok, and I think it all boils down to I can't stand bugs. And again, I will get into that further once we get to the web. So, do we have any other final introductory type thoughts?
System's failing!
Oh man, this is ridiculous! We're an exploration ship, not a battle cruiser!
No choice. Our ship was the only one that could lock onto Megatron's warp signature.
Shields are doing a major fade!
Plasma cannons to full power!
Their shields are down! Destroy them!
Now, where's the fun in that? A little torment, I think.
First, yes. Side guns.
Rupture! The stasis hold is failing!
No! We're going down.
Launch all pods. Get them into safe orbit.
And the first episode we're going to be talking about today is Beast Wars, Part 1. Much like the TFG1 podcast, there is a booklet. I will be reading the synopsis from the booklet. There was a special preview in April of 1996. The regular premiere date was September 16th, 1996. And of course, this episode was written by Bob Forward. Out of a warp gate in space, two interstellar ships appear, one Maximal and the other Predacon. They exchange fire and crash land on the planet below. With energon levels too high on this planet, the Maroon Cybertronians reconfigure their sequences, assuming new beast modes to better protect themselves from energon overload. Dinobot blames Megatron for leading the Predacons to a planet other than Earth, while the Maximals begin to explore this uncharted world. Outside, or ousted from the Predacons, I should say, Dinobot challenges Optimus Primal for leadership of the Maximals. Do we have any opening opinions on the plot of this episode before we get into our actual discussion?
I do.
Yes, you do.
Of course I do. Actually, the first time I watched this, and this, again, was a long time ago,
okay, you're talking about the first time. Never mind.
Well, yeah, well, the first time I actually saw this, I didn't realize that the golden disc was so prominent. And it was years later when I first saw Theft of the Golden Disc that I thought, well, you know, how does this golden disc even fit in? I mean, I thought it was something they just kind of came up with in the third season. I didn't realize that Dinobot had it in his hand. In the first episode.
Ah.
Yeah, so, you know, I thought it was interesting that first episode, they land, Dinobot's got it in his hand, he's like, what the hell, we're supposed to be on Earth. And it makes me wonder if they were supposed to be on Earth because they knew that the Ark was on Earth, or, as Megatron says, they're just there for the Energon.
Well, now see, I would debate that, though, because as we will find out later in the as we go along throughout the podcast, what did Rhinox say? The transwarp driver, whatever the heck it was, can travel through space and time. So they could be anywhere on any planet. But Megatron knew, regardless of whether you had two moons, he knew deep down, because eventually that whole plot is brought out in season two of him going to Earth. And I think what it says later on in the seasons is that he is secretly searching for the Ark. I mean, we'll get to that at some point down.
Or is that a retcon or
no? You know. I don't think so. I don't know, Steve.
They always meant to have it play out like it did. It was the more the series progressed, the more they tried to tie it back to G1.
Right. Well, episode 3, you've got Starscream in it, so I mean they're.
Well, I mean they did make a lot of mentions and. Like Fanwank in there in between,
yeah.
But it was still supposed to be a standalone.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how they mentioned the Great War.
See, that's what makes me think that it wasn't original. I mean, I know that I've seen the interviews and the special features on these DVDs, but I'm sorry, this is not a standalone show from the get go. It isn't. If you take Beast Wars parts 1 and 2, and you take More Than Meets the Eye from G1, parts 1, 2, and 3, it's pretty much almost
same episode.
It's the same episode, just different characters and different setting. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
No, yeah. But that was about the only logical way to start off the new show.
Yeah. No, I mean, any Transformers show, they should land, they should send out the eye in the sky, scan vehicles, or animals in this case, and you know, gather up their alt modes, and then introduce themselves with a nice, you know, 5-second stock footage transformation.
Right, and I'm not saying that it's a bad thing that they did that. I'm not saying that at all. I just noticed it more. Like, when I first did my 48-hour watch-through, mm-hmm. I was watching for enjoyment. I wasn't watching for review. I wasn't prepping for this show. I was just watching for enjoyment, because this is the first time I've actually owned the Beast Wars DVDs ever, so I didn't really catch up on it. But when I was watching these first two episodes, part 1 and part 2 of Beast Wars, I really caught on to it. That, holy crap, they're starting it just like they started G1, which is good. I'm not saying it's not good. Who wants to go first with their thoughts? Steve, do you want to go first?
Actually, I'll probably let you guys go first, and then comment after.
Alright, well, I don't have a lot of notes for this episode. I do have some. Again, as I just mentioned, my first note is same type of battle scene as in More Than Meets the Eye, going back to a G1 reference. Transformers look great in 3D.
I gotta argue with you there.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, granted, they look good. I mean, and in 1996, you know, this was state of the art. This was about as good as you were going to get with the computer animation. But, you know, after having watched Avatar last week, you know, it's like you go back and you watch these over again and think, oh my God, this is awful.
No. Okay, first of all, you cannot compare Transformers, whether it's truck, not monkey, whatever, you cannot compare that to fucking Avatar.
I know, it's not, you know, pure real motion 3D with photorealism and whatnot, but when I was watching The Theft of the Golden Disk, I was thinking, man, this is really, really dated. And it occurs to me that maybe they were trying to make it look dated so that it would mesh better with the actual TV show.
Well, they were, because, Steve, wasn't Theft of the Golden Disk done 10 years after?
Yes.
Yeah, something that, well, I thought maybe it's just bad animators. I didn't realize it was, holy crap, you know, it's just as bad as the TV show.
It's actually worse quality in some regards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it gets the point across. The animation's good enough that you can see them emote, and you can see what the action is, but as far as, you know, any type of scenery or explosions or, you know, anything that has anything other than the fact that they're talking to each other and occasionally shooting at each other, it's just not as pretty as I think it would be.
I think it is for the time that this was out. You know, as you said, this was pretty much groundbreaking stuff. This had never been done before, as far as I know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can compare it to today's standards and say, oh yeah, it's not as good. That's fine. But for me, coming from a nostalgia point of view, where I had never actually fully seen the show all the way through when it was on air, so I didn't know how good or how bad or whatever. I just think they look cool in 3D. Because, I mean, G1 wasn't really 3D.
No. Not at all. All.
So, you know, my next note is about the intro scene where they get shot down. Mike will really like this because it's a callback to our TFG1 Skylynx discussion. When they jettison all the pods, that ship is shitting in space.
It's just, it kind of spirals out of control, and it's just shooting out a spiral of these little turdlets. Yeah.
And then they all have blinking lights.
Blinking turdlets.
Flashing pieces of shit.
You heard it here first.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, again, they introduce all these things in the first episode that makes you wonder, what the hell are those for? I mean, why is it so important to shoot these pods out in orbit? You know, they don't explain it for a long time, but, you know, it makes you wonder, like, what do you mean the Great War? They're foreshadowing something. What are they talking about? They don't go into it, but, I mean, they throw out a lot of ideas really quickly that, you know, kind of beg to be expounded upon.
Very true.
And if you've watched all the episodes in the 48-hour span, you already know, but, you know, if we were looking at it from the point of view of never seen it before, I'm just now sitting down to watch it, it throws out a lot of ideas there that make you want to come back and see what's going to happen next.
I still can't believe you never watched Beast Wars.
Who?
You.
What? No, I didn't watch it in 1996.
I did.
Yeah. I was 96, I was getting my first job in Chicago. No, I was about a year or two away from getting my first job in Chicago. But, you know, the first time I'd put on a tie to actually go into work, and, you know, I'd gotten my, bachelor's degree. And it was, you know, it was not a time for, you know, watching cartoons and doing that type of thing. That wasn't until much later when I had more leisure time and disposable income. So, no, I it just wasn't on my radar back in 1996. Years later, closer to 2000, you know, again, more time on my hands, more disposable income, when I started getting back into Transformers, that, you know, I realized what Beast Wars was. But by then, Takara had already started bringing back vehicles.
Right.
Vehicle modes with their car robots. And that's what really brought me back, was the car robot series. And it was probably another couple of years on top of that before I went back and watched the probably 2003, and I'm not sure what year I said I met Gary Chalk, but I believe it was the BotCon of 2003 that I went back and watched the Beast Wars episodes on DVD.
One of my other notes is G1 did have some funny moments in it, but it wasn't a comedic show. This is a comedic Transformers cartoon.
Well, shit, yeah. Some of their characters are clearly comedic.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, take Rat Trap, for example. Rat Trap and Dinobot are basically, and I will say this throughout the entire span of this show, all 30 episodes, that Rat Trap and Dinobot are the old married couple once they meet. But they are pretty much doing the same thing once they land on Earth. You know, Rat Trap's basically questioning Primal's command. Same thing with Dinobot with Megatron. I like Optimus's comment after Rat Trap says something. He's like, just no please to some people.
Yeah.
You know, I find this show to be very funny at times, and I like it.
Yes.
I forget which episode it was. I think it was The Web, where actually Megatron gets shot and his head, I don't want to say explodes, but hits a wall and all his teeth fall out. And
yeah,
it's very slapstick.
Yeah, it had a Looney Tunes moment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was in a dream sequence in The Web.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then eventually you end up with Waspinator as in the comic relief.
Yes. I do like how they... well, first of all, I noticed a slight difference between this Sky Spy and the G1 Sky Spy. Mm-hmm. The fact that instead of just the thing spinning on the satellite, they actually put out an energy field around it to scan them. In the
right.
And I thought that was very cool. I like how they pretty much showed off prehistoric Earth. I thought it looked really good.
Well, again, it's as good as they can make it look. I don't mean to complain. You know, it was 96. You know, it was as good as they could do it. But yeah,
I will probably say this every single episode of this podcast again. The music in these is just awesome.
Yeah.
I really noticed the music. I really noticed, and not just the intro theme, the theme for each character. Not since Thundercats have I found a cartoon that has a theme, a musical note theme for almost everything.
Hmm.
Almost everything. Not everything, but almost.
Yeah, they did a good job with that.
For some strange reason, I really like the sound Cheetor's gun makes. I have no idea why.
The gut gun?
Cheetor's gun, yeah.
The intestinal fluid gun? It's like, wait a minute, is this a colon blaster? Which end is this?
We have the colon blow cannon.
The colon blow.
Oh. Damn.
Like, wait, I had beans for lunch. You're going down, mister.
Well, it does hold his stomach casing.
You know where I've seen the colon blow from?
Saturday Night Live.
No. National Lampoon's Van Wilder.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways.
You have that in there. It's a cereal and Saturday Night Live is a commercial.
Okay, well.
I think it's like an energy drink kind of thing in this, in Van Wilder.
Well, in National Lampoon's Van Wilder, it was a laxative.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
It's a good name for a laxative.
Colon blow, yeah. Cheetor, I didn't really find too much. I mean, I know, Michael, you don't like the, you know, you're going to keep saying, oh, it's as good as it can get for 1996. I didn't really notice a whole lot of animation flubs like I did in the G1 episodes, but I did notice something about Cheetor in the scene where he's running away from the battle. This is after the dream sequence. I believe it's after the dream sequence when they're going back to base. When he's running in robot mode, it looks weird. He looks like he has something wrong with his leg, or he's got his underwear on too tight or something.
I was going to say he had something wedged up his ass, but...
Well, he just did. I do like how they leave you on a cliffhanger. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's a nice way to snag you to continue watching.
Yes. What are some of your notes there, Michael?
Well, I like the sheer amount of character development in this episode. I mean, it's mostly lopsided on the Maximal side, but you get a really good feel for who the Maximals are. Or not so much Dinobot. Dinobot's more, he gets a lot more character development in the second episode. Once he actually says, oh, I've decided to become a Maximal. But the rest of the team, you really get a feel for, you know, what type of personality they have right out of the gate. Yeah, and it's probably probably the second episode where you really start to see Primal as an extension of Optimus Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's just so selfless. But, you know, this episode, you get a really good idea about Rat Trap, you know, who's mercenary, in it for me, you know, if it were... I don't want to equate him with, like, Han Solo, but he's like, look, princess, I'm just in it for the money, and, you know, you give me my cash and I'll be going now. You know, and, you know, like Han Solo, he turns out good in the end, but, you know, he's just a dick in the beginning. Cheetor, you know, is your young and brash character, and, you know, Steve equated him with Hot Rod. I was thinking more like,
No, I equated him with Hot Rod.
Oh, okay, well, I was thinking more like a, well, yeah, every Bumblebee character there's ever been. Yeah. If you color him yellow, you know, it's gonna be young and brash.
True.
Yeah. But, you know, he's just, I'm just gonna run out there and do whatever I damn well please as quickly as possible! And gets into trouble every time. And I'm wondering, you know, how many episodes in this first season are going to be, okay, we got to go bail Cheetor out of the frying pan. Because it seems like, especially like as early as episode 3.
Yes.
Even episode 1, yeah. Well, got to go dig his ass out of the fire now because, you know, there's a giant bee just hanging out, minding his own business, and he's got to transform and shoot at it. Yeah, it's like,
hey,
what the hell, Cheetor?
Practicing.
Yeah, he's practicing shooting like a stormtrooper. He's like, pow, 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 pow. Did I hit him? No. Oh, no, I suck. All right.
Round 2. Fight.
Fight. Well, no, I mean, he can't hit the broadside of a barn. It's kind of sad. But, yeah, again, character development. Dig it. The other thing that I thought was weird, and going, it's probably more character development on the Maximal side, but... Do they all rename themselves? It's like, did they have different names before they land and say, oh, look, I kind of look like a cheetah. I guess my name is Cheetor.
I don't know. Steve could probably tell more, but I don't think so. I think Optimus was Optimus when he... See, the problem with... I know they did Theft of the Golden Disk 10 years after the show was over.
Yeah.
The problem with Theft of the Golden Disk is they show none of the current Maximal characters whatsoever.
Mm.
So you really don't get a whole backstory for Primal, Rhinox, Rat Trap.
All right.
Steve?
Yes. They never actually list their proper names prior to Beast Wars. The only ones that actually had set names were Optimus Primal and Megatron, although some of the like credits had similar sounding names, but they never actually mentioned what the Maximals' names were.
Well, I mean, eventually they start calling Optimus Boss Monkey, which is I dig better than Optimus Primal, to be honest. But
because he's a big-ass monkey.
Because he's the boss monkey. Yeah, I dig that. But, yeah, I just wasn't sure how the, you know, how that came about. I mean, for all we know, the writers actually had names for them before they chose their Earth Mode names.
I don't know.
But, did you catch the Dinobot / Starscream vibe right off the bat?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, Dinobot's like, all right. You screwed up, and now I'm going to be the leader. And, you know, as opposed to, you know, smacking him down and calling him an idiot like G1's Megatron would do, Beast Wars Megatron turns on him, has his lieutenant blast him out of the, you know, he kind of does that Team Rocket thing, and Dinobot blasting off again, and ding, out on the horizon.
You think that's where Pokemon got that from?
I think so. Yeah, they got it from Dinobot.
Damn thieves.
I know, yeah. Well, it, maybe not. Dinobot didn't actually go ding, but it would have been priceless if he had. Yeah. If they ever go back and remake these, that they should include the ding as he shoots off into the horizon.
I'm getting it now that you guys are talking about it, the whole Starscream reference, but as the episodes, as we progress through our podcast episodes here, I will be constantly saying Pterosaur is just like Starscream. Because,
oh, yeah.
I mean, after Dinobot defects to Maximals, Pterosaur...
It takes up the mantle.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Dinobot ends up being... By the time you get through part two, you start seeing his good qualities. You know, his sense of honor, his skills, things like that. It's not just bluster and bravado and this, you know, senseless need to be the leader. He's actually got something to back it up with. But just for that first initial scene where he's like, you failed and you suck and I'm better and I'm going to be the leader. And Megatron just goes, ah, you're dead. You know, or banishes him. Whereas you would never see that in G1.
No,
in G1 it was forgive him over and over and over again.
Yeah, he would just shoot him and say, get back to, you know, swabbing the poop deck, go over there.
Yeah, yeah.
And where's Beast Wars Megatron's like, yeah, take a hike.
Yeah, take a hike, we'll see ya. Yeah.
He's like, I don't need your traitor's ass.
Well, what I, you know, and this goes right back to the graphics, let's say, the computer animation here. What I'd like to see is, you know, wouldn't it be neat if they could go back and tweak some things? And, you know, I'm a big fan of, like, first-person shooters. Like, an older one that might run on an average PC nowadays would be, like, Fear. Fear was a really good first-person shooter. But the thing about the graphics there is that if you have a lower... if you have a PC that can't quite generate the horsepower to run the game, you can dial back the graphics, cut down on anti-aliasing, so there's a lot more jaggies, or you can use a lower resolution set of skins for all of the models, things like that. You can set it so that you don't see as many trees or mountains or in the background, or the water doesn't reflect anymore. You know, but if you crank up the graphics, you get higher resolution models, you get lots of trees, you get fluttering leaves in the trees, the water is rippling and reflecting, and you know, as far as I can tell, for the most part, it relies more on your video card. If your video card is capable of displaying these things, everything gets prettier. And I wonder, well, I mean, somebody would have to go back and create higher resolution skins for these models and maybe tweak the polygon counts a bit, because they're all very blocky. But, I mean, with a little work, I think that, you know, these could be brought up to speed and they would look really, really pretty. It would look more like a movie.
I'm not sure. I would have to do some research on this. I read Gort Lacy's and David Lambert's reviews of these DVD sets on TVshowsOnDVD.com.
Yeah.
One of them made a comment that Rhino has lost the rights to the Beast Wars DVDs. I have to argue that because I bought them from Rhino.com. So
you just bought them.
My question would be, can Rhino still sell the DVDs without actually owning the rights to the property?
I don't know.
Because if they can, then I bought them from Rhino.com. If they still have the rights...
I'm not sure if that was an extension of my question, or if you're changing the subject. But, I don't think that selling the DVD would have anything to do with...
Way. What I'm saying is... I'm trying to get there in a roundabout way. Steve and I have been talking about the Matrix set, the G1 Matrix set.
Okay.
Factory just re-released.
Right.
And he had said to me a couple of times that he would love to have Shout Factory re-release the Beast Wars DVDs in a remastered form like what you're saying.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I mean, that would be very cool.
Right.
When you remaster, though, that's like, you know, tweaking the color at the 2D level,
okay,
or, you know, things like that. I'm talking about actually going in and tweaking the code that generates the 3D animation.
Right. No, I understand that, but
Mainframe probably threw all that shit away long ago.
Well,
so.
Mainframe doesn't even exist anymore. It's Rainmaker.
Yeah, and they probably deleted that crap.
They only acknowledge their animation. I mean, they acknowledge it, but they don't have anything on their site about it other than, like, Beast Machines images.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah, I know. I actually, like, some of the darker tones for the Beast Machines, I like the images better, but as far as the character designs and everything, I liked Beast Wars better.
Right.
See, now, when you get into, well, we're a far long cry from Beast Machines, but when we do get into that, you know, the animation is better, the lighting is better, I want to say the skins, the models, everything, they crank it up. You know, so it's really nice. It's much nicer than what we'll find in Beast Wars. And what I'm wondering is, as we get, like, to Season 3, maybe they do crank up the poly counts, or the polygon counts in the models for the 3D models for the Transmetal guys. I mean, I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've seen it. It'll be interesting to, you know, see that when we get to that point.
Do you have any other notes that you want to impart on us? About the actual episode?
Yeah. Why doesn't Rhinox have a giant tongue on his chest?
He does.
He doesn't have a tongue on his chest.
No, he doesn't. That's the, that's part of his jaw.
It's like the palate there. There's no tongue.
Okay.
It's his face. his tongue transforms into his head. There's just nothing we can do about it.
Oh, that's gross.
Wait. Steve's basically saying, ladies and gentlemen, that Rhinox's tongue is his face. Oh my god.
Why is Rhinox running his head up against my shoulder? He's tasting you. He wants to see if you'd be good for dinner.
Well, actually, I think his tongue's actually on the top half of his jaw. I would say it, you know, to actually put it into
perspective.
How it would transform. I can't think of the fucking word I wanted to say, but anyways.
Don't you find it disturbing when they transform, especially like Dinobot? Dinobot's whole head pops off and splits in half, and the top part just jumps onto his chest.
We'll get to that in this episode, actually, once we start talking about the web. Any more notes, Mr. Wilson?
Not for this one.
Okay. Well, all right.
Steve?
Well,
yes.
Hang on a second, Steve. So, Steve, what are your thoughts on Beast Wars Part 1?
Well, although I didn't actually write any notes, I like how it started off like G1, you know, that just, I liked it actually as a newcomer to the whole Transformers franchise when I first saw this. I had no prior knowledge to G1 until actually later on, almost season 2, was when I actually had seen G1 episodes, so that's when I actually got the connection. But I definitely like in this episode, you actually get to see Megatron's pre-Beast form, which he's the only Transformer in the entire Beast Wars saga that you get to see pretty much prior to, other than I believe you do get to see Black Arachnia at some point in her stasis bot, but it's not really as detailed as Megatron's.
I kind of thought he looked like an Action Master.
Yeah, he pretty much did.
Yeah.
Which they also managed to inflect in his pre-Beast Wars comic and the Theft of the Golden Disk. The only difference is he had a battle armor.
Yeah.
But I like how they had to adopt beast forms. It was something different. The toys along with it were very detailed, similar to the show. I mean, as good as it could be for the time. All the voicing was, in my opinion, pretty cool. Waspinator actually was a far cry from what he ended up becoming later in the show, being that he didn't have a neck in part of this episode.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
I didn't notice. I was thinking the same thing about Cheetor. Where's your neck?
Well, and then Yeah, Infamous Waspinator firing his pink eye lasers, similar to Dinobot, and you never see those again.
Hmm.
And it's only in this episode.
Wow.
That's kind of like Optimus Prime and his axe arm over the Hoover Dam there. The dam, where it's like, you know, he's never going to use that again.
Yep.
They bring it out in the first episode.
It was a selling point.
Yeah.
But,
well, yeah, that, and they didn't use the right head. But.
True.
Anyways.
But, I mean, this episode was really good for what it was, for being a 3D show. But they did have a lot of animation errors, which is to be expected for launching a new show. And, trying to you know, render all this and get it perfect, which at the time was a whole new
unacceptable.
Yeah, well, I mean,
get it right.
But they did manage to correct most of it. One of the other major issues with this episode is: did you notice Cheetor actually spent 90% of this episode in robot mode and didn't have energon overload?
Yep.
And everybody else, like the Predacons, were only in it for like 5 minutes, and then they all were like collapsing on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's the spots.
Yeah,
the spots reflect energon.
Yes, kind of like the sun.
That's why he's yellow.
He bathes in energon energy,
like Superman.
Bad you didn't get the energon farts like in Bad Spark.
Okay. Oh, God. Let's not jump ahead of ourselves.
Yes. Anyways, though, I would say that this was a very awesome start to the Beast Wars saga.
Remember, we still have to talk about part two, so, I mean, we're just talking about part
one. I understand, Captain Obvious. but I did like how Dinobot traded right off the bat. It kind of reminded me of Starscream, although his role got replaced, basically, in that Starscream part, but... I like how it ended with the cliffhanger of Dinobot challenging Primal, and they're on this narrow bridge that you can tell somebody's going to fall off at some point.
He says, "None shall pass."
Believe me, when we get to the second episode coming up next here, I have a note about that. Anything else, Steve?
Besides that, I'd have to say that Bob Forward, who wrote the first two episodes, I would say that his writing pretty much kicks ass.
Yeah, it does.
I'm not going to get into the third episode yet, which was by the other famous writer of Beast Wars.
All right, DiTilio.
Who, I'm not thrilled with that episode, but I'll discuss that later.
We'll get to the web later.
Yes, but I'd have to say that's all the thoughts I have from this episode so far.
All right. Well, up next is Beast Wars Part 2.
So much energon. Yes, I can almost taste its power.
The energon fields would destroy us as robots in less than a minute. We will have to stay in beast form. And Optimus and the Maximals are coming!
They must stay in beast form as well. And I will handle Optimus personally. The galaxy, it has come to this, Optimus Primal. Face to face, tooth to claw. Yes, have you anything to say?
I'd say that's prime. Let's do it!
Yeah! Megatron shall be ours! Not if I can help it! Surrender, Megatron! You're trapped!
No! You shall not defeat me!
Okay, for Beast Wars Part 2, according to the booklet here, Megatron interrupts the duel between Dinobot and Optimus Primal, but both Maximal and Predacon alike are distracted from this fight when everyone notices a huge positive crystal energon in a nearby mountain peak. Now it is a race for this unstable power source, with an imminent and explosive battle amidst the powerful but dangerous energon. What did you guys think of the overall plot for this episode? Even though that was a kind of a short synopsis, again, I'm reading these out of the booklets, but just the overall storyline of this episode. What did you guys think, Steve? You can go first.
Well, I like how it finally shows the fight break out between Primal and Dinobot, and you see how honorable both characters are.
Right.
So you can kind of see an appreciation and a cooperation forming, you know, with Dinobot's honor, of course, you know. Mm-hmm. He finally joins the Maximals anyhow, and nobody trusts him. And Primal's pretty much saying, yeah, I'll give you a shot. And Rat Trap's pretty much trying to say that Dinobot's just using him. He's going to betray him. Don't trust him.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah. So they all end up finding and on their way to, I believe, go back to their base or go back to... they were on their way somewhere and ended up getting in a battle with Wasp Leader Pterosaur, and, of course, Dinobot...
fires blindly.
Yes, and fires blindly, and then they end up blowing up a mountaintop, and you can see Energon, which everybody starts going towards, where you see a massive, massive battle.
That wasn't Dinobot.
Between all of these. What?
Oh, I thought when you said Dinobot, I thought you meant when he was firing at Waspinator and managed to hit the cave roof above their heads.
Yes.
Is that what you were talking about?
Yes.
That wasn't the mountain. But
wasn't the mountain, but okay. The
mountain already happened, I think.
Already happened.
Yeah.
Because that was Scorponok that fired the missile, and he's like, Megatron, the missiles, they're going to hit the mountain! And that's how the Energon was revealed.
Yeah. I don't like the idea of crystalline energy. Yeah. Like, but no, I was following what you were talking about as far as, you know, they don't have any reason to trust Dinobot, and here he is, you know, blowing the ceiling out from above them, and, you know, stalactites coming down and hitting people.
But, yeah, I definitely liked how they had everybody kind of pretty much fighting their series-long counterpart on this mountain, all in beast form. Mm-hmm. And you finally see Dinobot pretty much return the favor to Primal.
Right.
You know, for Primal saving him.
Right.
By deflecting the missile, causing the whole mountainside to blow apart, while Megatron, being a retard, decides to transform in this giant mountain of God, which has to be, in my opinion, the stupidest thing you could ever do. If you're gonna overload, there's no point.
Yeah. No, I thought that was kind of dumb, but then again, I thought he was going for a dramatic death.
Yeah, you never know. But Megatrons are not defeated easily.
Yeah.
As he will come to say, over and over and over and over.
I think we need to have a some sort of count for this show, as far as just cheesy lines, because there are a lot of cheesy, and this show does date itself very, very badly with some of the cheesy lines. The first note that I wrote down was "Taste of the Bad Kitty," which is what Cheetor said to Rat Trap, I think.
What?
He said,
"Taste my bad kitty."
No, "Taste of the Bad Kitty."
I have no idea what you mean.
"How would you like a taste of the bad kitty?" And Rat Trap's like, "I'll rearrange your spots," or something.
I don't think Rat Trap runs Robo Pussy, but.
Oh boy.
"Taste of the bad kitty. Come get some."
My one nitpick for this episode goes to the.
It's got spots. Anyways, go ahead, Mike.
That's right.
My one nitpick of this part two is when the Optimus Dinobot battle. When Primal transforms, he has his feet turn around. It's like he's turning around back. almost right on the beginning part of the bridge where it thins. Like the ground starts off, then it goes thinner and thinner and thinner. How the hell did he not fall off of that in mid-transformation? Because it doesn't look like it's wide enough for him to step around. I know this is a nitpick. Don't get me wrong. I understand it is. It totally is. I completely admit that. But it just doesn't look right.
I like it better later on when he just kind of hops up and then swivels at the torso.
Yeah.
Whereas now he's actually kind of like walking around in a circle while he's looking at you. It's like, well, that's just creepy.
Yeah.
He's like, let's do the square dance.
Yeah.
Square dance transformation.
Honestly, you know, really, I'm probably going to have... I may have nitpicks about storyline, but as far as the way the actual... And, I mean, we've kind of already argued about this a little bit. These things just look so damn good to me. The cartoons themselves. I don't know why. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. And then my next note is the Battle of the Beasts, which goes to... The battle on the mountain.
The Optimus versus Megatron battle?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that was well done.
And again, even though supposedly this isn't supposed to be a continuation of G1, this episode ends just like More Than Meets the Eye Part 3 ended.
Huh.
Pretty much.
You'll have to elaborate a little bit.
Well, the only thing that's missing is... where Megatron in G1 says, "I will be avenged," or whatever he says. I mean, it pretty much ends the same way More Than Meets the Eye Part 3 ends, where, you know, in the end of this, Primal is saying, "Oh, you know, Megatron will be back." That's the same thing Optimus Prime said in G1. You know, and, you know, so the battle will be here, and it'll be called Beast Wars, and then it goes into the music and it closes. I don't know. That's what caught out of it. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I thought that the Optimus / Megatron battle was a little more epic than the Optimus Dinobot battle. The Optimus Dinobot battle, it should have been epic. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, it was literally, you know, they were fighting for leadership of the Maximals, and it ended up just them kind of grabbing each other's hands and pushing. Who can push the other one off of the precipice faster? And they kind of did that until Megatron comes along and orders everyone to fire on them at once.
Yeah.
And again, stormtroopers, they can't hit the broadside of a barn. They should have taken Optimus, Dinobot, and the entire, you know, precipice out on the first volley.
Yes.
Not the mountain behind them, but, you know.
You know, you mentioned how you like how the Optimus Megatron battle is at the end. We are going to have custom artwork for each of these podcast episodes, and the art image for this episode is where Megatron has Primal pinned, and his little his Tyrannosaurus head is basically trying to swallow Primal's head.
Yeah.
That's going to be the art for this episode.
Ah, cool.
Yes. What other notes do you have, Mr. Wilson?
Sorry.
And nobody's talking.
I'm sorry. He's breathing or something. Stop breathing.
Vader, fuck it off. It's either Darth Vader Dark Helmet. I haven't decided yet.
Derek. We'll just call him Derek.
So yeah, Beast Wars episode or Beast Wars Part 2, Michael.
I had a couple things I wanted to bring up, which was I mentioned that in episode 1 or part 1 I should say. Yeah, they had a lot of character development for all the Maximals. Not so much for the Predacons, with the exception of like Megatron. And part 2 there was a little bit of personality came out for some of the Predacons. But mostly it was Dinobot. They really kind of fleshed out Dinobot, and which doesn't really count because he's a Maximal all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But I like that. It's nice to get that out of the way real quick. I like the idea, that there's actually personality here. It's not just, talking heads. And the fact that, when they blow up the mountain,
yeah,
you would expect there to be a lot, again, this is probably limitations of the CGI, but you would expect there to be a lot more debris. It's a mountain. I mean, it should be like, devastation for miles around, and I was remembering, I forget the name of it right offhand, but it's a Pierce Brosnan movie where there's a volcano. Dante's Peak, and in the beginning it's like the volcano explodes and there's fire and brimstone and ash raining everywhere, and it's piercing people's craniums, and it's horrible, and oh, the humanity. And here it's like boom, oh duck, there's a little dirt in the air. I kind of expected more. But state of the art for 96, but not quite what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Other than that, I think it was a good follow up to part one, and it set up the rest of the season very nicely.
Yeah, I will agree with that. This set up the show, the Beast Wars 2-parter set up the show very well. And again, we can compare it as much as we want to G1 More Than Meets the Eye. But, as you guys said earlier, every Transformers show has to have some sort of starting off point. If you look at animated, they're pretty much doing the exact same thing they did in G1, with the exception of the fact that in that, Optimus Prime is watching what happened in G1. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's not this show. But, same basic premise. And again, I like my little line about the whole stasis pod thing. I thought that was really cool that I came up with that, because that sounds like something that Mr. Wilson would come up with, not me.
Well, I was thinking that when I was watching it, but I, for some reason, didn't write it down.
It's shitting in space.
It's just shooting a huge spiral of turds. I thought it was cool, but at the moment I was thinking something more like, what are those for, Yeah, I know what they're for now, but, at the time I was really trying to focus on what is somebody who's never seen this before going to say.
Right.
The Axelon shooting baby eggs.
Baby Axelons.
Baby eggs.
Baby eggs.
Oh, baby.
Oh, God. Okay, do we have any other thoughts on the Beast Wars Part 2?
I don't believe so.
Okay, up next is...
Reverse Squiggly. Sorry, that was the Tetris God.
Up next is The Web.
Oh, brother, you need a maintenance bot badly.
You're in a stasis web. It drains away the energy, but leaves the flesh alive. At its current setting, this will take only a few moments. But I find a slower pace makes the vital fluids taste so much better.
The final episode of this that we're going to be talking about for this show, for this episode of the Beast Unleashed podcast, is called The Web. The original air date is September 18th, 1996, and it was written by Larry DiTilio. Beyond the maximal perimeter and on a mission to test Rhinox's new communications device, Cheetor sees Scorponok investigating a cannon that broke free of the Predacon ship during its crash. Later scouting Predacon headquarters for the cannon, Cheetor is captured and finds himself locked in beast mode, zapped of all his strength, and stuck to Tarantulus's stasis web, a prisoner within the arachnid scientist's lair. I'm going to go first, because this is, for me anyway, this is pretty much going to turn into a headshot, because, holy crap, I hate this fucking episode.
What, right off the bat, you hate it?
I hate this fucking episode.
Man.
Harsh. The only good thing about this, again, as I've said earlier in this episode of the podcast, first off, as the episode opens, it's spanning over the planet, and it shows just how beautiful Earth once was. Now, if you want to argue animation, fine, but just the background and the way that Earth used to be in prehistoric times before we humans came and mucked it up.
I think that was the caveman that all fucked it up, actually.
Okay, well, anyway, okay.
Blame the caveman.
Anyways, okay, I hate bugs, which includes, but isn't limited to, scorpions, spiders, wasps, and pretty much everything else. That's it. You know, we were talking about bad transformations earlier.
So basically the non-dinosaur Predacons, all of them.
The only Predacon that I can actually... Yeah, pretty much. Anything that isn't... Black Arachnia I can stand because she ends up being good. But I'm sorry, Tarantulas? Ugly. just fucking ugly. First of all, you were talking about bad transformations earlier with Dinobot. You know, Tarantulas' spider face becomes his stomach. That's disgusting! That's just... Yeah! That's just nasty. Let's just nasty.
Then he can look at you with 11 eyes.
That is weird. You know, what I think is weird is he's got these big googly cartoon eyes in spider mode, and then he transforms and he's got more of a visor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I'm really glad he's got the visor, because I'd just be pissed off if he had, you know, 8 googly eyes on top of his head all looking around in unison.
Like Black Arachnia and Beast Machines.
Yeah.
Well, that is spooky. I'm glad she can cover that shit up.
We'll get to that.
Wouldn't you like to see that when you're kissing her?
No.
That's right. It's like, oh my god, yeah. I was going to say something horrible, but I won't go there.
This is the episode that has the dream sequence that we were talking about earlier. After Cheetor goes offline and the dream sequence is showing, was that Starscream's jet mode?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
But the colors, though, it looked a bit more like a Thundercracker.
Well,
everything was purple there, so I don't know.
Yeah, they had like that, like Teletubby accuracy in there. So I mean, it was kind of.
What I was wondering about that particular sequence is it's Cheetor's dream sequence, and yet you've got a G1 Seeker in there. It's like, well, why is he dreaming about G1 Seekers?
He played with them when he was a little spark.
You got tiny Cheetor in his bedroom with little Seekers hanging from the ceiling on fishing line, you know.
I like this one. Who's that? Starscream.
He's my favorite. He has null rays.
Then they recalled him.
It'll shoot your eye out, kid.
That's one of Steve's favorite.
No, they called him because they locked away everything about Starscream in the archives.
Oh, I wasn't aware.
That comes
okay,
later,
yeah.
Though.
Okay.
That comes later.
Yeah.
This is more for Michael's benefit than it is for yours, Steve. I'm going to link to the, in the Skype window here, to the screen cap thread on Predacon Empire, because my next note for this episode is, Ew, spider on cat rape. That's just wrong. Just
oh.
Wrong.
And this is where my comment comes in.
Oh, God.
Go ahead, Steve.
This is tarantula raping cheetah. Stinky web pussy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Look at that.
The kitty's like, no. The tarantula's like, give it to me.
Give it to me. Look at the way he's dressed. He's asking for it.
Oh, God.
You know what I think?
Shoulders. He's like, come on, baby, you can do it.
See, now in Japan, they probably actually have the eight-armed tentacle porn action going on here.
Oh, that's not even the worst part. After the image that I have on here, the...
Worse than tentacle porn.
I'm talking about the... no, not worse than tentacle porn. I'm talking about the image that's on the website here. That is not the worst image. The worst image is the next frame where it pans out, like, going to commercial. It actually shows Tarantulas' full body like this, but the whole shot of both of them. And it just... God, I can't even...
And then he starts adjusting the web, and he starts kind of, you know, moving up and down, and Cheetor is like, oh...
Shut the hell up, damn it!
What are you doing? Oh, my. I think I like that.
Go
with it, Cheetor. Just go with it.
Stop it, damn it.
Now, is it just because he's a spider this is freaking you out? Because, I mean, if it was like...
Yeah, pretty much.
If it was like Black Arachnia, you'd be like, oh, cool.
I don't think Silverbolt would let her do that, but anyway.
Well, I think Cheetor wanted Black Arachne anyway, so that's besides the point.
That's coming. Fine. We're not at that point yet. That won't happen until Feral.
Feeling a bit disturbed, a little queasy here.
Yeah.
somehow, whenever you get on the episodes, they tend to hit this downhill curve.
I'm sorry.
I think that's just because we have this, like, dynamic going.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's what makes it a fun podcast.
Well, I mean, it depends. I mean, if you have listeners that enjoy plumbing the depths of depravity, then sure, all right, yeah. I can see how that would be a good thing. Otherwise, I'm just creepy.
Because I don't like this episode whatsoever at all, I would rate it 8. First of all, we're not going to do a rating scale unless we actually figure out if we're going to do one later, but... I would give this episode 3 fucking zeros. I hate it that much. The only other good thing I found about this episode was Rat Trap has smart battle skills when he needs to use them.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of the first episodes you actually see Rat Trap thinking of other people and showing how ballsy he can be in an episode.
Yeah, where he's not hiding and saying, you go get your ass shot off.
And this also began the, he actually fought in Beast Wars Part 2, but this is actually one of the first battles that is just one-on-one Tarantulas versus Rat Trap, and it just keeps going throughout the entire saga until, you know, death do they part.
Well, in the second one, when they all gathered on top, I should say the second episode, they're all gathered on top of the Energon Mountain, and they all pair off. And it's like, okay, now, here we have Rat Trap versus, you know, the Tarantulas, and I'm wondering, you know, is this the first pairing, is this like where they pick their nemesis? Because here you've got, again, you know, Rat Trap versus Tarantulas. Mm-hmm. I mean, true, Cheetor's there, but he's just kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
I'm not really sure. Steve, you can go next with your notes, because I have nothing more to say as far as my notes.
Well, I would have to say that I don't like this episode, and it's not just because the RoboWeb thing. I would have to say it's mostly because it didn't feature really anybody for the most part. I don't like the entire cave. Just spending the whole episode down there. Not much really went on besides Rat Trap saving Cheetor's ass. And why I can't stand this episode is when it was on cable, they played this one 50,000 times. So every time it went on reruns, you'd see this one at least twice a week.
Wow.
Yeah, but yeah, they had a lot of. I don't know. I didn't like this episode very much. There's not. It was a throwaway, basically.
It's odd that they would have a throwaway so quickly. I mean, I thought that this episode was more about building up Cheetor's personality, building up Rat Trap's personality so that he's not just a dick all the time, and actually introducing Scorponok, for one, because really all you've heard of him so far is, Megatron, look at the missiles, you know? And here we're actually seeing him, I'm second in command, you're going to do what I say, and Tarantula's essentially giving him the finger from the shadows, disappearing. And you're learning a little bit more about how Tarantulas operates, where, you know, he's... I want to say Tarantulas is kind of like the Rat Trap of the Predacons, where Rat Trap on the Maximal side is more the mercenary. Hey, I'm just going to do my own thing, and you guys, you know, cover my own ass, and you guys do your own thing. Whereas on the Predacon side, you've got... Tarantulas, who's already has his own lair set up. He's completely separated himself from the group. He's doing his own thing, and later on you find out he's actually got his own agenda.
Yeah, and we will find that out later. We're not going to talk about that now.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, you know, it they're literally two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, oh, no, I agree. Before we, you know, you're talking about Rat Trap, so before you go into your full notes there, Mr. Wilson,
yeah.
I got to mention something in part two, I believe it was part two of Beast Wars, where Rhinox basically says, you know, cover fire, and he goes, I'm not, you know, Rat Trap says something
about, yeah.
About not going out.
Cover fire. Yeah. They need it. We're giving it to them.
Yep.
Fix them up by the back of the head.
Well,
shoot, damn it.
But the funny part was right before that, when he kind of looks at him, and he's like, he taps him on the head. I like that. That's so cool. Hello?
Well, no, he's just kind of taking advantage of his size there. You know, I mean, literally. I mean, yeah. He's like, look, I'm the biggest fucker here. So, you know, you will kind of do it as you will follow my lead. You will do as I say. But the fact that he actually picks him up bodily and kind of aims him, you know, all you gotta do is pull that trigger. I'll aim for you.
Yeah.
I thought, and then they're making their retreat. You know, their strategic withdrawal, and he's got a gun in one hand and a mouse in the other. He's still backing up. I thought that was funny.
The one thing I like about Rhinox in the beginning, this whole beginning part of the show, or the beginning part of the series, is his guns. His guns are so cool.
He's got the Gatling gun.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah. No, I mean, I look forward to when they have the Rhinox episode.
Oh, yeah, when he goes bad. Right, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, they haven't really gotten into his character builder arc yet.
Yeah. I do like that episode, and yeah, that's one of the better ones featuring a spotlight on Rhinox. It is definitely better than the other Rhinox-centric episode that is not going to be named because it is completely throwaway and it is a piece of written garbage.
Okay, we'll get to that later.
Yes. I think you know what I'm talking about. But.
You probably do, but I can't think of it at the time, so you can tell me off air. Steve, do you have any other thoughts before Mr. Wilson fully takes over the show?
No, I just... well, actually, one of the favorite quotes that I have down is when Tarantula says, I hate that rat.
Yeah. Hate that rat. That's a good line.
That's a good line.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as... Everybody gets at least one good line here, and you know it's not a one person centric episode. But they do have everybody gets a little bit of everybody involved. I should say gets a little bit of character development, and that's why I don't think it's a complete throwaway. It's not like, hey, we're gonna get the Maximals and the Predacons together, and we're gonna have a baseball game, and whoever wins the Beast Wars, or something retarded like that.
We're going to have a food-eating contest and have explosive farts the size of moves.
It's Stand By Me, where they have the pie-eating contest, and they're throwing up all over each other.
We're getting off the topic here, so what are your other thoughts?
Well, my question is, you know, will the real MacGuffin please stand up?
Huh?
Yeah, well, you know what a MacGuffin is, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a plot device that has no bearing on the actual story. Right. It's just kind of there to push things along. Well, we start off with this communicator device that Cheetor's like, I'll test it out for you. And, you know, suffice to say that they've only got one. And at the end of the episode, they basically say, we don't have any more parts to make anymore, so why make one, right? And later on in the series, they can all communicate just fine without them anyway. So here we've got this item that, you know, really has no bearing on the rest of the mythos of the series, but they're just gonna, you know, they might as well have just said, Cheetor's gonna go out for a stroll today.
Yeah. Although I could...
Oh, go ahead. What?
I was gonna say, although I could have swore that there's an episode where they actually do make a new comm link for everybody.
They do. I don't remember which one it is, but they do, and that's why. I think it might either be right before Transmetal 1 or right after.
Yeah, I'm wanting to say that too. I'm not sure at what point.
The Transmetal bodies, at least for the ones that have the Transmetal bodies, shield them better when they're in robot mode when they're out in the field, so they don't always have to be in beast mode when they're near the Energon fields or whatever. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Well, that and the Energon was all detonated in the season finale of season 1.
Well, that's true, too.
Well, there's that, and, well, I mean, the fact that they've got this communicator that they can only make one of, and it breaks by the end, and they can, you know, they complain about it, but it doesn't really contribute much. But then there's another MacGuffin, which is the Mega Cannon.
Right, yep.
They dig the Mega Cannon out, that's a big deal, and then finally, Scorponok scurries away with it, and what do they do? Do they ever install it? Does Megatron pat him on the back and say, good job, have a cookie?
Well, yeah, but this Mega Cannon, although they, even in the wiki, they don't mention anything about this cannon again, I like to think that they end up using it in Season 3 and go with the flow because he has that railgun cannon.
Okay.
I like to think that that's the cannon that it originated from was this episode, but there's no actual canon on this.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, but I mean, you maybe that's why you guys don't like the episode mainly is because you've got a double MacGuffin just to build a plot.
No, I
know. It's like there's character development, but how do we get these characters together in one spot to develop them? Well, we make up shit. And it's shit that comes and goes and disappears and has no bearing on anything else.
Well, I can't speak for Steve, but I know why I hate the episode. It's the whole bug thing.
Well, you're gonna hate a lot of them because there's a lot of bugs.
There was not a
maybe not bug on cheetah humping, but there's gonna be bugs involved.
It's not bug on cheetah humping, it's bug on cheetah raping. It's not a hump, it's a rape. Cheetor is a prisoner with this jackass. He is not saying, yes, please hump me. He is held against his will. It is considered rape.
There was no insertion involved. You can't prove a thing.
Okay.
Tarantulas is like, look at the pretty spots.
Stop.
You know, it's a dry hump. There's no laws being broken here.
They did transfer fluids, though.
I know the law in Canada, and I happen to know.
We're not going there. No, we're not. No. It's not a road that we're going to go down on the show. No.
Do you have... Sir Cackle here.
The only other thing that I was wondering about was, as far as Cheetor goes, you know, I mean, after this traumatic experience that he has, he I want to say has a deeper appreciation for just how horrible Tarantulas is, and I'm pretty sure that the part of the episode where he has the dream is before this, but you know he's perched on top of this tower in Cybertron, and he easily blows away Scorponok. He easily blows away Pterosaur, and there's Megatron, and pew pew, knocks him out with one shot, and his head kind of does that weird thing where it hits the wall and the teeth fall out. And he's like, I am the kitty. And then he sees the eight eyes peering at him from this little dark crack in the wall, and he completely loses his shit. And he can't shoot to save his own life, and it's like, whose dream is this? Anyway, why am I having such a problem here? What? You know, he's just scared to death of Tarantulas. And I'm wondering, is this foreshadowing for Tarantulas is going to rape my ass? Or is it, you know, really he has a problem with spiders?
Possibly, but the thing is, though, what I would say is Tarantulas has him hooked up to this thing. Oh, wait, no.
No, it was before. Yeah.
See, the way
I think he has a phobia of the spiders, because I think there's even comments later in season one that he goes, ew, when there's, like, spider, you know, like Tarantulas web stuff on him. And
right, but, well, now...
Well, you can see where that came from now.
Right, yeah, you can see where that came from, though, now. But before he gets captured by Tarantulas, when he has the dream sequence, at first, because I was getting confused, I thought he had it while he was with... If he had had it while he was with Tarantulas, what I would surmise is that, even though we haven't seen it yet, it was Tarantulas' mind control.
Right, Soundwave-esque mind brainwashing.
That would be Bombshell, not Soundwave.
I was thinking animated Soundwave.
Okay, well... Still,
sorry.
It originated.
Sorry,
yeah.
Mixing my genre here.
But anyways, if it had happened during Tarantulas is holding him, I could see that it could be part of that. But since it didn't, you know, my point is kind of mute there. But I don't know.
Yeah. I was actually for some reason thinking it occurred after this scene, and then it's like I just got my ass raped by a spider. Now I'm having spider nightmares. the dream sequence was before this. And, you know, I had read somewhere that Cheetor has these foreshadowing type, you know, ESP type dreams.
Kind of like Rodimus?
Does Rodimus have?
I thought he did it. Oh, no, I'm...
Proselytizing dreams? I'm trying to think what the word prophetizing, profiteering,
No, not profiteering. I'm thinking of when he journeyed.
Help me with the word.
I'm thinking of when he short-circuited himself and journeyed and learned. Never mind.
Oh, no, Cheetor's not a dumbass, if that's what you're asking.
Shut up! Anyways.
Did you guys notice in this episode they actually had a, in the dream sequence, foreshadowing to Rat Trap rescuing him?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's foreshadowing that Scorponok and Tarantulas are going to get the upper hand on him, and then here comes Rat Trap. And plus, there's Starscream in there, and guess who makes an appearance later?
Yes.
Starscream's ubiquitous ghost.
Oh, well, yeah, but that's down the line.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah.
Starscream.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. You know, exactly how what else he's going to predict.
Yes.
He's the Nostradamus of the Maximals.
Good lord. Do we have anything else that we would like to say on these?
Square piece.
No, we're not doing Tetris God. Do you have anything else?
What?
Have any...
Yeah. Fire.
Do you have anything else that you want to mention about the web?
I believe we've wrapped it up.
All right. We will... I will say we will be right back at this point because we're going to go into the outro. We'll be right back. This is the quote of episode one.
Oh, for booting up cold!
Thank you for joining us here on the Beast Unleashed podcast. There are ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. The first... www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other GCRN podcasts there. The second is you can stop by predaconempire.com/nexus. Those are our new forums where you will actually be able to see the image of the spider raping the kitty. Get all your GCRN transforms.
It's worth it. It's worth it.
It's there. Third is you can leave the show feedback on iTunes. Just a little quick note about this. When Steve first put this in iTunes back in June of 2009, we had already had 29 subscribers and the show hadn't even started yet. So please, what the hell is, oh, the, okay, never mind. So yeah, please leave us reviews in iTunes. The fourth is you can visit yet another great geek culture website, www.earth-2.net, and their forums in the self-promotion section are our threads for the shows. And the fifth is the email address, which is beastunleashedpodcast. Shut up, I got it right. So I get
bees on a leash? What?
Beast unleashed.
Is this like some kind of honey site?
It's beastunleashedpodcast@gmail.com. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say which show you're leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. You can follow us on Twitter. The show name there is Beast Unleashed. Mine is TFG1 Mike. Steve, what is your Twitter?
SCP21.
And Michael?
Pecan Court Michael.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Beast Unleashed podcast. Join us next time when we will be reviewing three more episodes from Beast Wars Season 1, those being Equal Measures, Chain of Command, and Power Surge. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with Steve Megatron and Pecan Court Michael singing the immortal words of Optimus Primal, that's just Prime. And thank you for listening. Until next time.
Yeah, well, at least Megatron's gone, and so's the Energon. So it's over. Can we go home now?
No, Rat Trap. For now, we're stranded here with the Predacons on this unknown planet. Megatron may be back, and there is still more Energon. If they ever get enough, they could conquer the galaxy. So for now, let the battle be here, on this strange primitive world, and let it be called Beast Wars!
You are listening to the Beast Unleashed podcast.